Well, thank you all for being here. And you'll see this beautiful picture up here on the screen is actually at my research site. This is Craters of the Moon. In the foreground, you can see some really fresh basaltic lava, that really dark color. And in the background, for those of you that aren't familiar, in the center there, that's a cinder cone, and it's called Inferno Cone. Okay, so Craters of the Moon is located in southern Idaho. You can kind of make out a U-shaped arc that goes across the state from the western edge and where Boise is located, all the way moving past where Craters of the Moon is and up to the east where Yellowstone National Park is. And you can see Craters of the Moon there. That area is called the Snake River Plain. And a closer look here at the lava fields that make up Craters of the Moon, you can see some different colors. And those refer to the different morphology of the lava, as well as the different types and amounts of vegetation that are on the lava flows. But what I'm going to be focusing on today is this area. For any of you guys that have been to Craters of the Moon, this is where the visitor center is located. And it's also where you've got the majority of the cinder cones. There's about, I think, 15 or so cinder cones that are located right up in this area. So there have been 8 eruptive periods that occurred between 15,000 years and 2,000 years before present. So this is a relatively young area, geologically speaking. And there's about 2,000 years between every eruption, and the last eruption was 2,000 years ago, so we're about due for one down there. But these sort of eruptions that occur here, these cinder cones are shield volcanoes, so they're really not very violent in comparison to the stratovolcanoes, like you may think of Mount St. Helens or Mount Rainier. So the composition of these is basalt to basaltic andesite, and you can see at the bottom, this is an average composition of this volcanic material, and just want you to focus on these two here. The silica content is about 52%, and that's really low in comparison to the more siliceous volcanic material that composes the Cascade volcanics in the Northwest, those that you may be more familiar with. That material has a composition around 75% silica. And then also the iron content is about 16%, and that in comparison to the more siliceous material, it has about 2.5%. So the objective of this study is to examine the secondary mineral synthesis along a chronosequence of cinder cones. So this area has been mapped by geologists, and they have some reasonable ages of the lava flows and the cinder cones. So I chose 3 cones here, a 2,000, a 6,000, and a 12,000-year-old cone on which to study. So the mineralogical composition of the colloidal fraction in volcanic materials relies on 3 parameters. This first one, the mineralogical, chemical, and physical properties of the parent material. And the parent material here at Craters of the Moon, although these eruptions occurred every couple thousand years, the content, the composition of this material is pretty similar. Second is the post-depositional weathering environment. And because these are related in close proximity to one another, all these cones, it's got a pretty similar weathering environment. And then this last one, the stage of soil formation. And that's what I'm focusing on today. Really time. So that's the variable that I'll be looking at. So the methods I want to talk about today for the sake of time are the soil morphology, particle size analysis, and then some selective dissolutions that I've used in an attempt to identify these amorphous materials. So this is a photo of some of the cinder cones at Craters of the Moon, and you can see the ones that I'll be referring to later. The distance between Big Cinder Butte and Sunset Cone is approximately 4 miles, so they're all pretty close together. You can see that. And the climate in this area is it's a xeric moisture regime and a cryic temperature regime. So it's pretty dry, maybe about 18 inches of rainfall a year, and it's pretty cold. Elevation here is about 6,000 feet. So here's a photograph of a 2,000-year-old profile. And the classification is pumiceous amorphic xeric vitrecryand. So it's cold, vitre, relatively little weathering of the, showing that there's a lot of glass in this soil, and then xeric. So let's see, really this looks like what I call a pile of cinders. If you aren't familiar with cinders, they're these really light vesicular gravel size, to much larger also, but in this case they're pretty small. The vegetation here is low density, sagebrush, antelope bitterbrush, and limber pine. And as you can see in the photo, it's quite low at this site. In fact, there's really no vegetation to speak of, except for that shadow there is actually the shade from a limber pine tree. Okay, so this is a 6,000-year-old profile. And the thing that really hops out here is that third horizon down, really the color of that is really starting to look like highly weathered iron. So we're starting to see some horizons forming here. We've even got an A horizon. You can see the roots up there. And the vegetation here is much higher density than the last site. The taxonomy is pretty similar. It's medial, pomaceous, amorphic, xeric vitrecryand, or haplocryand. It really depends on the water retention, which I have to work on, figuring out how to do that with these cinders. All right, so here's the 12,000-year-old profile. And that's looking like a really nice, well-developed soil. You even pick up a BS horizon or two there. Vegetation is very similar to the 6,000-year-old profile, but the soil itself just looks like it's begun to form quite a bit. And this is the best way to look at it, looking at all three profiles there. You can see the progression from the 2,000 to the 6,000 into the 12,000-year-old. So that picture says a lot. Okay, so this graph here, I'm going to be showing you a number of graphs that are set up the same way. So at the top of the graph is actually the soil surface. They're at zero down to a meter. Across the top, in this case, is a percentage of coarse fragments. I want you to have a look at that green line there. That's the 12,000-year-old profile. You can see in the surface there's about 30% coarse fragments. And then it slowly increases at about 45 centimeters. There's maybe 85 or so percent coarse fragments. But in the surface there's a lot of fine material. Then looking at the red line, the 6,000-year-old profile, there's about 30% coarse fragments in that top horizon, and then it greatly increases as you get below about 18 centimeters. And then the blue line there, the 2,000-year-old profile, about 55% in the surface, and then immediately jumps up all the way up over 90% coarse fragments. And here's a similar graph showing clay percentage. Again, that green line, you can see there's above 10% clay in that upper part. And then as you get down to around 68 centimeters or so, it drops below 10%. But there's a good amount of clay in the fine earth fraction in the oldest profile. The red line showing the 6,000-year-old soil is about intermediate between the 12 and 2,000-year-old soil. So the next method that I want to get into is the selective dissolutions. And I'm sure you're familiar with sodium pyrophosphate that extracts your organometallic complexes, your iron or aluminous humus complexes. Second is your acid ammonium oxalate, and that extracts out your poorly crystalline iron as well as aliphane and amygdalite. The dithionate citrate bicarbonate can be used to identify the amount of crystalline iron and aluminum oxides. But it also extracts out the poorly crystalline. So really, the way that you would identify your crystalline iron oxides is by taking your dithionite citrate bicarbonate value, subtracting the AOD value from that, and you'd get crystalline. But I've been having some trouble in that the amount of ammonium oxalate extractable iron has been greater than my dithionite citrate bicarbonate iron. And in looking through the literature, I found that there's been studies that show that the AOD treatment actually does extract some magnetite. And it turns out these soils have a lot of magnetite in them. So I wasn't able to use the combination of those extractions to identify my crystalline phase or even the amorphous phase. So I used this fourth selective dissolution called Tyron, which extracts the poorly crystalline iron and aluminum oxides, some iron that's substituted for aliphane and amygdalite, as well as opaline silica. So I used this Tyron and was able to, just by some simple subtraction, the dithionite minus the Tyron gave me the amount of crystalline iron oxides. So just want to highlight here the andic soil properties rule in soil taxonomy. And the important thing here is that andic soil properties are created to represent the minerals that have proceeded only to the point of formation of short-range order materials. So magnetite, being crystalline, isn't one of those minerals that you would want to extract with AOD in order to determine whether or not we have poorly crystalline materials in the soil. So this is just a note that may come up in the future. This isn't the case in more siliceous volcanic materials. It's really in these systems where we've got very high iron and manganese in the soils. Okay, so here is the alphane and amygdalite content. And the green line there is the 12,000-year-old profile. And you can see it's lower in the surface, but then you get a big jump around 25 centimeters all the way out to over 8%. And that is where that BS horizon is, that you saw that real reddening of the soil. The red line there, the 6,000-year-old profile, it's quite high in the surface and then slowly drops, decreases with depth. And then the 2,000-year-old profile, pretty low throughout. So here, looking at the ferrihydrite, this is a short-range order iron oxide. That green line for the 12,000-year-old profile really jumps out there at that BS horizon around 25 centimeters, and then slowly decreases with depth. The red line there being moderate, intermediate between the 2 and 12,000. Crystalline iron oxides, this is what you'd expect after more weathering. The 12,000-year-old profile is pretty high throughout. The 6,000 is intermediate, and the 2,000 is lower. So this is a summary slide. Using that aluminum plus half iron by oxalate extraction, I have a weighted average for the whole profile there. The 2,000 is 1.2%, the 6,000 is 1.9%, and the 12,000-year-old soil is 2.6%. So you can see a nice gradation of weathering over time within these profiles. So the 2,000 is comprised primarily of poorly crystalline iron and aluminum oxides. The 6,000 has elevated amounts of these minerals, and the 12,000 has elevated amounts below 25 centimeters. So the idea here is that it's possible that what's forming in the surface of the 6,000-year-old profile is moving down and accumulating in those BS horizons a little bit lower. There are lesser amounts of crystalline iron oxides in the subsurface of the 2,000, intermediate in the 6,000, and greatest in the 12,000-year-old. And then one other thing here, I did some grain counts of the very fine sand fraction looking at glass, and 88% of the very fine sand fraction was colored glass, 7% was this pitted colored glass, and really what that is just glass that showed some sort of weathering. The 6,000 had 62% glass and 18% colored pitted glass, and the 12,000 had 55% glass and 25% pitted colored glass. So some future considerations I'm working on, I'm looking at total elemental concentrations for each of these profiles. Here I'm looking at the coarse fragments as well as the less than 2 millimeter fractions, really to get an idea of what's going on elementally across this chronosequence and within these profiles. And then secondly, I took select clay samples and analyzed them using X-ray absorption spectroscopy following the treatment with the acid ammonium oxalate. To really see what was going on with the iron minerals at a much more micro scale. So I'm looking at treatment effects using XS. And with that, I'd like to thank people that have been integral to my work while at Idaho, as well as my funding sources across the bottom. And with that, I guess I'll open it up for questions. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, please.
Do you know if the climate in this area has changed very much in the last 12,000 years?
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up. I wish I could talk for 10 more minutes about that, but certainly there was a glacial period that ended about 10,000 years ago, and that may have an influence as to why it's not a linear relationship 2 to 6 to 12,000 years. So it's certainly something I'm looking at with pollen analysis that people have done in the area. Yeah. Yes?
I noticed in your 2K profile, it was all destratified. How deep do you have to go before you get stratified tephra? Or did you go that deep?
I'm not sure that you'd get real stratified tephra because it's so local. The cone is erupting right there, and it does at some point, some of the profiles, I mean, you can't dig a meter because you get this really large cinders that you can't dig through. But the other problem I have working in a national park is that I was only permitted to dig down to a meter. So if you can help me get deeper, I would love it. It's hard to tell what's going on in the top meter, but give it a shot.
All right, thank you very much.